Morning. Today's Daf Menachos Peivav. We are on. We're at the bottom of Pehamed Beis. We are starting at the last line. Amy Vilomi Beis Hazvalim. A discussion in the Mishnah about where to go get our olives. So the first place to go to is Tekoa. So the Mishnah told us yesterday on Pehamed Beis in the Mishnah in the middle of the Amud that Tekoa is Alpha L'Shemen. So the best place to go, the prime A olives are going to be taken from Tekoa. And then the Mishnah identified, according to Abishol, you can go to Regev, which is an Aver Ayardim. All of Eretz Yisrael is acceptable, but these are the places which are the best. And then the Mishnah then goes on to identify what not to get. So the Mishnah told us that if the land requires fertilization or if it requires irrigation, so that's those olives that are growing on those lands, which are lacking, are not going to be the best olives. Let's say the olives are growing where other yield is growing as well, so there's going to be a fight over the nourishment. Those olives are also not the best as well. But the Mishnah goes to point out the vim hevi kasha. But if I bring olives from these inferior types of lands, that's okay. That's acceptable. Certainly lechatzchila, it's not the best. And then the Mishnah goes on to point out em vim min hagargarim shenashru b'mayim v'lo min hakvashim v'lo min hashlukim vim hevi pasul. If olives, the only way we're going to be able to extract the oil is by soaking them in water, or by pickling them, or by cooking them. So that's no good. In fact, the Mishnah goes on to say here, if the only means of extraction is through soaking, pickling, or heating them up, so that's no good at all. In fact, that's going to be disqualified. And on that, Vahatanya, the Gemara now is going to be quoting a Braisa. I'm sorry. Another point for consideration is that the Mishnah says, Anfaktan, you don't bring Anfaktan, and if you do, it's going to be kasher. Now we can start with our Gemara. We're on the very bottom of Pehemet Beis. So the Braisa over here goes against our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that Anfaktan is going to be Bidiyev, it's going to be Kasher, and the Braisa says it's going to be Pasul. Now, fair to ask at this point in time, what is that? What are we describing over here? So basically, we're talking over here about various types of secretions of the olive, meaning the oil is coming out extracted when pressed. But even before pressing, so there's going to be a little bit of secretion coming out of the fruit, and I'm sure it's got some oil qualities to it. But in other words, are these secretions going to be acceptable or not? So what we have over here is a steer between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Mishnah says, B'dievet, it's okay. The Braisa says, it's not good. And so that requires some sort of solution. Well, before that, by the way, I skipped the parentheses on the top of Pevavim and Aleph and just read the next three words. Mimneshu's Thraf. And the Braisa says, because it's Thraf, meaning exactly like we just said, it's a secretion. It's not an oil being pressed from the olive, but rather it's some sort of secreted juice coming out of the olive, and that's just simply unacceptable. So Amar Rav Yosef Lokasha, Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Shimon Barebi. The Rabbi Chiya Zarik Le, Rabbi Shimon Barebi Metabelbe. So it's a debate between Tanayim in terms of whether it's acceptable or not. One Braisa, or I should say better, our Mishnah, who subscribes to the idea that it is acceptable, that's going like Rabbi Shimon Barebi, and the Braisa that says it's unacceptable is Rabbi Chiya. No, generally speaking, makes sense. Usually, we assign Braisas to authorship of Rabbi Chiya, so it makes sense that the Braisa is going like Rabbi Chiya, and our Mishnah going like Rabbi Shimon Barebi, fine. Interesting, the Gemara points out that Rabbi Chiya, so this secretion, Zarikle, he would throw it out. Meaning, he felt not only just for the halachas of oil, but just in general, he really felt that it was not, it didn't have the qualitative nature where he would eat it. And on the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Rebbe, metabalbei, meaning he would dip in it, meaning for him, it was just as good as olive oil. V'simancha, now the Gemara says, I'll give you a good way to remember, which is holding like which position. Rabbi Shimon Barebi, I'm going to make the most obvious statement of the day, so he was the son of Rebbe. Okay, good. But that's important though, that's valuable information right now, because Rebbe, we know, was one of the wealthiest people known in human history. And we are going to assume that his son, had some of the wealth, right? The estate was passed from father to son, so his son also had wealth as well. And so, a good way to remember this is Ashirim Mikamtsan. So when you're a wealthy person, so you know what's a great way to retain your wealth? And that is, be frugal. So in other words, so a wealthy person is frugal. And it's excellent advice in terms of just preserving and maintaining your wealth. So over here, we're talking about secretions of the olive. Is it the best? No. Is it olive oil? Apparently, to a certain degree, it's got to be olive oil. And Rabbi Shimon Barebi says it's good enough where it can be used for the purposes of menachos. And in fact, for his own personal use, he would use it. He was so wealthy, and meanwhile, he allowed himself to use this as olive oil. And the Gemara's point is exactly that's right, meaning exactly for that reason, because he was so wealthy and he understood and he understood money and how to preserve it. So yeah, so he was mekametz. He was frugal. Shisha chareshim b'shem namora, my shem namora. We know that before any candidate, I'm being very nice in the way I'm describing it. Any candidate who's going to present herself in front of Achashverosh, so she had a year's preparation. And 6 months was she prepared herself with Shemen Amor, and then Chishisha Chalashim Ba Besamim, Vesam Rukei Anashim. Okay, so says the Pasuk in Megillas Esther. Why we bring it up right now? Because we're going to be identifying what Shemen Amor is. What is Shemen Amor? My Shemen Amor? Rav Huna Bar Chiya Amar Sa Tachta. Okay, so that was helpful to any one of our Aramaic speakers. What about the rest of us? Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba Amar Shemen Zayish Lo Hevishlish. And Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba says it's talking about olive oil that is being produced from olives that are underdeveloped, right? Basically, that haven't even reached a third of the development. So you're basically plucking these unripe berries, these unripe olives from the tree, and the oil that's produced from it is this Shemen Amor that's being described. Tanya. The Gemara quotes a brisa, Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Anpaknon, Shemen Zayish Lo Hevishlish. In this thread, in the same idea, the Anpaknon that we described, although it's a little different, we had the word Anpaktan, but Anpaknon is Shemen Zayish Lo Hevishlish. Again, it's a olive oil being produced from these unripe olives. Lama Sachin Oso, so, and it's used for purposes of cosmetics, and the Gemara actually speaks out its benefits. Shemeshir Seser, number one, it's great for hair removal, and Ma'adin as a basar, and it rejuvenates the skin. Ein mivin min agargarin shenashu b'mayim. Now, if the only way to extract the olive oil is by soaking in the water, that's no good. Tanu Rabban, the Gemara quotes a brisa. Shemen zayis kavush shaluk sharui v'shal shmarim v'shal reach ra lo yavi v'mevi pasal. Good. So the brisa over here, very similar to our Mishnah, says that if the oil is only coming about through either pickling or cooking or soaking, or if it's coming from the sediment, or if it has a foul odor to it, so you're not allowed to bring these, and they are disqualified. By Rabba asked the following question. Higdisha mahu, shi'alake alav mishum ba'mum. Now this question should sound familiar because the Gemara basically asked the same question yesterday, but regarding other items that are carbon items that are non-animal carbon items. We talked yesterday about the wood. Over here the Gemara is now asking about olives. We know that now this olive oil produced either through soaking or cooking, et cetera, et cetera. So they're going to be disqualified. What if I attempt now to be makdish this oil? Am I going to be in violation to the point where I'm going to be receiving a lav? As we learned in yesterday's daf, if a person is makdish an animal with a balmum, so he's going to get malchus. It's subject to malchus. It's a lav in the Torah. The Gemara in Temura goes through the source of it and how we arrive at this conclusion, but that is the conclusion. And so therefore, one could extend this to being makdish anything that is disqualified. So maybe there will be a lav as well. And that's exactly Rabba's question.
Is that an action, being makdish something to get lashes from?
Yeah. In other words, yeah, I know it's, right. It's a lav shame, but maisa. I hear the question. But yeah, the Gemara in Temur says you're going to get malchus. So ma'ashi yelak alav mishum ba'mum. Kevin the pasul but kemab mum dami. So one way to suggest is that, look, we know it's disqualified. You know you're not allowed to bring it, and you're a makdish it. So for that, you're going to be subject to lashes just like an animal. Or maybe no. Maybe just as a formal legality, as just simply the law dictates, maybe you're only going to receiving lashes for being makdish an animal, which is a bamum. Even though what you're doing over here is categorically wrong, but maybe it doesn't incur the malchus. And take with the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Okay, we begin with the next Mishnah. Okay, we are now going to be talking about olive harvesting. Okay, you know how much experience I've had in my lifetime with olive harvesting. I've been at one olive press in my life, but I have been at one. But in other words, before we even get to the press, we're talking now about the harvesting. We're certainly going to be talking about harvesting in three different waves. Now, it can be that it was a seasonal issue and that they were harvesting at three times during the year. That's one possibility. That's the way Rashi seems to present our Mishnah. Tosfos is unhappy with that presentation. I'll tell you what, we can learn the Mishnah without fully understanding when the harvests were done. Obviously, it would be better if we had a better understanding, but I'm just not a farmer. It's an excuse, not a good one at that, but it's true. So shlosha zeis and hain. So there are three, and I'll say it like Rashi. There are three harvests that are done over the course of the year in terms of the olives. Uvehen shlosha shlosha shmanim. Now, for each one of the harvests, there are going to be three presses, three pressings that are done with each one of the harvests. So that means to say that over the course of the first part of today's daf, you're going to hear a lot of 1A, 1B, 1C, 2A, 2B, 2C, 3A, 3B, 3C. And it's my organizational chart. But basically, in other words, we're looking at a harvest and we're looking at three pressings within each harvest. And so, the Mishnah goes on. Uvehem shlosha shlosha shmanim. And so there are going to be now three oils extracted from each harvest. Hazayis arishon, as far as the first harvest is concerned, megargaro barosh hazayis. Now, not exactly clear, first of all, what the word is. I mean, I know we're looking at the word right now, but you'll see as we get to the Gemara is going to contemplate two ways to read the word, megargaro or megalgalo. When we get to the Gemara, we'll get there. So, but basically, the idea is that we let it fully ripen. Megagaro b'shazayis, and it's going to be on the top of the tree. The olives right on the top of the tree are the ones that are exposed to the most sunlight, and therefore they're the ones that are going to be ripened first. And so therefore they're going to be producing olives first, but let them ripen fully. Megagaro b'shazayis v'kotesh. And then what you're going to do is you're going to pound them, and then v'nosein l'sochasal, you're going to put them in the basket. Now what's going to happen is that you're going to have a runoff of the oil just simply because we pound them and we put them in the basket. And that is going to be our first press. Rav Yehuda Amar Sviva Sazal. And Rav Yehuda says, you don't put it on the bottom of the basket, but rather you put it on the side of the basket. What Rav Yehuda is concerned is that if you put it on the bottom of the basket, so yes, it's true, there's going to be a runoff of the olive oil from these olives, but there's also going to be a little bit of sediment as well on the bottom, and that'll cloud some of the oil. We want the first press to be as clean as possible. So for Rav Yehuda, we're going to put them on the inner side of the basket, so that before they go through the bottom of the basket, obviously, by the way, the bottom of the basket had holes in it. If I didn't clarify that point, it's okay. But in other words, according to Rav Yehuda, what we want the oil to do is run down the side of the basket, so that if in the event there's any sediment, it'll remain on the side and won't come down with it. And so therefore, that first press will be really clean. Rav Yehuda Omer Sivo Sasal Zerishon, and this will be now 1A. So this is our first press of the first harvest. Chazer v'toim b'kore. Now what we're going to do is we're going to have to apply pressure in order to get a second pressing. This pressure that we're going to apply is going to be done with a beam. Rav Yehuda Omer ba'avanim. Rav Yehuda says, no, a beam, no, but rather with stones. And so what is the reason why stones as opposed to beams, is explains Rashi, is because simply the beams were too heavy, and once again, Rabbi Yehuda was concerned about the sediment that may come out as well if I apply too much pressure. So therefore, stones. I mean, again, if we were there and watching this, I'm sure all this would seem much, much more obvious to us. But that is the way Rashi explains Rabbi Yehuda. Zesheni, so now we just looked at the second pressing, which is going to be done with pressure, either a beam or a stone. Chazav etachan, and then we're going to now do the third pressing. Now for the third pressing, so we're going to have to grind up the olives in order to extract whatever olive oil is left. And then v'ta'an, and we're going to press it. Zeshlishi. And this is going to be now our 1C, our third pressing of the first harvest. Harishon l'menorah. Now, the first pressing that came out, the 1A, so that's going to be towards the menorah. V'ashala menachos. Now, 1B, 1C, that could be used for menachos, oil for the menachos. Hasheni. Now we are up to the second harvest. Megargaro barosh hagag. So once again, we're going to let it ripen. Now, barosh hagag, now on the top of the roof. Now, a couple of ways to explain the Mishnah over here. One way to explain it is that previously we were talking about the first harvest, we were talking about the olives on the top of the tree. Now we're somewhere in the middle of the tree corresponding to the rooftop, meaning the rooftop over here just simply is a marker of where we are on the tree. That's one way to explain the Mishnah. Another possibility is that it means that we're going to take the olives and allow them to dry on the rooftop in any event. The kotesh v'nosan l'sochasal, you pound them and you put them in a basket. Rav Yehuda Amar Sviva Sasal. Rav Yehuda says, not on the bottom of the basket, but rather in the perimeter of the basket. Ze Rishon. And whatever olive runs off now from the second harvest, that's going to be our first press of the second harvest, or what I would call 2A. Toin Bekor, now we're going to apply pressure. With a beam, Rav Yehuda Amar Bavanim, Rav Yehuda says, with stone. Ze Sheni, that's going to be our second press, or 2B. Chaz V'tachan, now we're going to grind it up. V'tan, we're going to apply pressure. Ze Shlishi. And that's the third press. Harishon l'menorah, the first press is going to be for the menorah, v'ashal l'menachos, and 2B and 2C are going to be for menachos. Shlishi, Now, as far now as the third harvest is concerned, otno bebeis habad achiyalake. So the harvest is coming now from the third round, the third harvest. So these olives need a little bit of tenderizing. So the Mishnah over here describes how it's going to be placed in the beis habad, in the vat, until achiyalake, until it starts decomposing. Okay, in other words, there's some process of tenderizing. Apparently, these olives aren't as ready to give off their oil as the first and second harvest. Now, what you're going to then do is you're going to bring them up, dry them on the top of the rooftop. Kotesh, you pound them. Venosein lesochasal. And now the rest of the Mishnah is going to sound awfully familiar. Then we're going to put it in the basket, in the bottom of the basket. Rav Yehuda Amar Sviva Sasal. Rav Yehuda says you put it on the inner perimeter of the basket. Zerishon, that's our first press. Toin Bekore, then we're going to apply pressure, either with a beam, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Bavanim, or Rabbi Yehuda says with a stone. Zesheni, that's our second press. Chazar V'tachim V'tan, Zeshlishi. And then you grind it up, and you apply pressure, and that's going to be the third press. Harishon LaMenorah, the first press, even from the third harvest, is qualified for the menorah. V'hashar LaMenachos, and the rest of it is going to be for the menachos. Ibai Lehu. Gemara's question that starts off with is, what exactly is the wording of the Mishnah? Throughout Shas, we find often that the Gemara is going to nitpick on a word, meaning but apparently there was a Misara in one of two different ways to read it. And so over here in the beginning of the Mishnah, it talks about how we are Megarger Berosh HaZayis. For the first harvest, we are to leave them on the tree. Now that's one possibility. Megargerotanan or Megalgalotanan. So the correct reading of the Mishnah is either Gimel Reish or Gimel Lamed Gimel Lamed. What's the difference between the two? Once again, I turn to Rashi. Rashi, the first Rashi is of the Gemara. Megargarotanan sheminiach hazayis ad shenizbash lo agargarim kol tzarchan. So one possibility is that we leave it on the tree, allowing it to fully ripen on the tree. That's megargaro. Megalgalo, says Rashi, dahinu nam sheminiach be'ilan ad shenizbash lo yafik agon beitza migulgelas. Right, we talk in the Gemara about an egg that's megulgal, meaning so ripe that it can roll. So over here, it too also means on the tree. So right now, the way Rashi presents it, there's no real difference in terms of practical. It's just a question of what is the correct misara. That's one possibility. If you look at the Rashi Ksav Yad, he says a little bit differently, which actually makes a difference. Megargaro shalokate gargir kan vigargir kan lefisha adain enam uvushal. So the way Rashi, the manuscript Rashi, the Ksav Yad Rashi explains it, is that actually we're going to cherry pick, or if I could use now a better expression, we're going to olive pick. Thank you. We're going to olive pick the ones that are ripe. So megargaro actually means that there's going to be a selection process of the olives that are on the top of the tree. Okay. And as opposed to megalgalo, which just simply means that we're going to take it all and we're going to collect it all. In any event, what's the proper way to read the Mishnah Tashma Detain? So the Gemara is going to quote a Braisa. Now, a lot of the Braisa I'm going to read really quickly because most of it's repetitive of that way we learned in the Mishnah. The only reason why we're looking at the Braisa right now is because the Braisa has a misara in terms of what the correct reading of the word is. Shemen Zayis Mizeso. Shemen Zayis is Mizeso from the olive tree. Mikan Amru, Zayis Rishon, Megalgalo, Berosh HaZayis. So here the Braisa says, Megalgalo. Good. And the truth of the matter is we could just move along to the next Mishnah. Obviously, I'll read the entire Braisa, but that's the point that we wanted from this entire Braisa, is that clearly the Braisa has the word Megalgalo, which means that we leave all of it on the top of the tree, allowing it to ripen on top of the tree, and then we make a collection, and then we harvest. You bring into your house. You are tochen berechayim. You grind it up in the rechayim. Vinos na besalim, and you put it into the basket. Now, already you notice a slight discrepancy between the Braisa and the Mishnah, because in the Mishnah we talk about ketisha, which is more of a pounding. And over here, we're grinding it up in the millstone. So later the Gemara is going to ask that question. The small discrepancy. Vinos na besalim, you put it in a basket. Shemen ayosim yemenez ayah rishon. So the oil that oozes out is the first press. Tan bekorah shemen ayotzim yemenu zeha yasheni. Then we put a beam on it, and then that's going to be the second press. V'chazu parak tachan v'tan zeha yashlishi. Then we grind it up, and then we apply pressure, and that'll be the third press. Harishon l'menorah v'shar l'menachos. First one is for the menorah. Pressing 2 and 3 is 4 menachos. V'chein zay sheni. V'zay shlishi. And the second harvest. And the third harvest. Otno b'veis avad. Now, as far as the third harvest is concerned, so again, it needs a little bit of softening. So we put it at the bottom of the vat ashilaka until it starts decomposing. Umale l'rosh agag v'osa osan kamin tamra. And then we put it on the rooftop and we make it like a column. We pile it. Ashi azova meimav until the secretion comes out. The consul of beis avad, and then we're going to collect it and we're going to put it into the press. V'tochno b'rechaim. And we are going to pound it in the rechaim, grind it in the rechaim with a mortar. V'nosa b'salim, we're going to put in the basket. V'shem ha'yosem yimenu zeh yarishon. And the oil that comes out of it, the first press now of the third harvest, is going to be the first press. Meaning, as the Bryce is about to point out, it's for the menorah. Tan b'kara, then we're going to put a beam on it. Shem ha'yosem yimenu zeh yasheni. And that's going to be the second press of the third harvest. And parakhaz of v'tachan, and we're going to grind it up v'tachan and apply pressure to ha'yishlishi, and that's going to be the third press. Harish l'menorah v'ashar l'menachos. The first one is going to be for the menorah. The others are going to be for a mincha. Rabbi Yehuda omer lo haya tochna b'rechaim ela kocho b'machteshes. Rabbi Yehuda says that we would not use a mortar, but rather kocho b'machteshes, we would pound it. Lo haya tochna b'korin ela ba'avanim. And not with a beam, but rather with stones. V'lo yinos b'salna ela soch svivas asal. Rabbi Yehuda says that we're going to put it around the inner perimeter of the basket, just like we learned in the Mishnah. Ad kan divrei habraisa. Again, the whole reason why we quoted the braisa is because in the beginning of the braisa it used the word megalgalo, so that gave us clarity to what the correct reading of the Mishnah is. Hagufa kasha, but as long as now we finished up the braisa, so a noted discrepancy between the braisa and the Mishnah. Look, the first part of the braisa clearly is the opinion of the Tanakama, but kote shmani Rabbi Yehuda he tochasal asan l'rabanan. Meaning the first part of the braisa is a chachamim because it talks about how the olives are put in the bottom of the basket, like we know the chachamim say. But meanwhile, it also talks about ketisha. Now ketisha, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So hi tana savla kavasa bechada pala galah bechada. So the Gemara says, okay, but the author of the braisa on the issue of ketisha is going to side like Rabbi Yehuda, but on the issue of where to put the olives, you put them in the bottom of the basket. That's going like the chachamim. Okay, good. We're on the Mishnah on the bottom of Pevav and Alev. In order to appreciate the Mishnah, so let's understand. We've learned now already this morning about the three harvests that are done from the olive tree. And we've also graded them, meaning we have 1A, 1B, 1C. 1A is for the menorah. B and C are for your mincha. We have 2A, 2B, 2C, and it's the same thing for every round. For all three harvests, it's going to be, the first pressing is going to be for the menorah, and B and C is going to be for a mincha. And so what our Mishnah now is going to do is basically our Mishnah is going to give us a grading system. Because when we bring a mincha, so can I bring oil from, let's say, for example, 3C? The answer is, yeah, sure. Right? We just learned together. It's qualified. But in other words, but there's also this idea of hider mitzvah, meaning I could bring oil from 3C, but what if I have an opportunity of bringing oil from 2C? So 3C, 2C. So is there a preference to 2C over 3C? And if there is, so then I should try to, I mean, I obviously could use 3C, but then I should try to get 2C because it's better. And so vis-a-vis carbon and mitzvahs in general. So there's this idea of hider mitzvah. So with the grading system that we're about to learn together, so I'll now know, right, I'll make the choices now a little trickier. Let's say I have 1C or 2B. Okay, good. So which one's better? Good. So with our mission now, we're going to have a grading system, and so we'll know. Harishon shebrishon ein lamala himenu. So as far as 1A is concerned, that is the best. Graded the best, it's the first pressing of the first harvest, and in terms of a grading system, there is simply nothing above it. Hasheni shebrishon v'harishon shebrisheni shavin. Now, 1B, 2A, equivalent. Now, it may bother you. You may be curious to know. Well, wait one second. Or in other words, 2A, isn't that for the menorah? So as we're going to learn in the Gemara in just a couple of minutes from now, yes, it's for the menorah, but you could also use it for mincha. Meaning, you might have thought, the Gemara actually entertains the Havamina, that for your A's, your 1A, 2A, 3A, you can only use it for the menorah, but that's not true. The 1A, 2A, 3A are qualified for the menorah, but you can also use them for a mincha. And so what we're learning right now is that the 1B and the 2A on a grading scale are the same. So if I'm in the store getting oil for my mincha, and I have a choice between 1B or 2A, no difference. And then,
except for 1B, you can't use the menorah.
Oh, okay, fine. But in other words, true. But for a mincha, they're equivalent. Okay.
For the menorah, they're not.
For the menorah, the 1B is can't be used for the menorah.
But 2A can be.
Right.
2A can be.
Right. So, Ein Lamala Imenu Hasheni Shabarishon Hasheni Shabasheni Shavin Hashlishi Shabarishon. Now 1C Vahasheni Shabasheni and 2B Vaharishon Shabashlishi and 3A Shavin. They're all going to be equal. It'd be great to chart this out, by the way. I could just easily envision the columns, one being higher than the other, and basically drawing a line across. Okay, anyway. So the Vaharishon Shabashlishi Shavin. Hashlishi Shabasheni, so now we are at 2C, Vahasheni Shabashlishi, and 3B, Shavin. So they are going to be graded equally. Vis-a-vis, if I have a choice between the two, equal. Hashlishi Shabashlishi, and finally now we're down at 3C, so Ein Lamata Himenu. Okay, so that is, now we're speaking, relatively speaking, of course, because it can be used, but in terms of a grading system, so it is the bottom of the, it's on the bottom of the rung. And so if you have an opportunity to get anything above that, obviously it's preferable. Afkol menachos hayu bedin sheet anu shemen zayit zach. Now you're going to see in the Torah, by the menorah, the Torah has a requirement of shemen zayit zach. It has to be not just olive oil, but zach has to be clean olive oil. And now in the context of our Mishnah, we know by clean what we mean is first press. First press is the cleanest because there I'm not applying a tremendous amount of pressure. The sediment is not coming out. It's not really cloudy. It is clean, pure olive oil. So by logic, by a kal v'chomer, you could have made the argument, if that's what I need for the menorah, I certainly need that for the mincha as well. What's the argument? The Mishnah provides it. So kal menachos hayu bedin, meaning din over here, meaning kal v'chomer, she'itanu shemen zayit zach. Ma menorah she'ino la'achila tuna shemen zayit zach. You know, by the menorah, we're not eating it. In other words, it's there just for illumination. And so it's really just a fuel. So functionally speaking, what difference does it make what kind of olive oil I use? If it burns well, so then we're good. And meanwhile, the Torah is demanding that it has to be pure and clean, meaning first press. And that's for the olive oil that we're not eating. One can easily argue and imagine that for the olive oil that we are eating, i.e. mincha, and by we, I mean really Kohanim, but still, there are some menachos that we're eating. They're not a lot of examples. Lach metoda. I can't think of another one off. I think that's it. So the but anyway, nazir also lach me nazir. Okay. Anyway, so the sorry, the so one can imagine now that they also need to be shemen zayit zach. So tamalomer zach kasis lama or vein zach kasis lamenachos. And so kal v'chomer is wonderful, but the pasuk's better. Meaning the Torah says that the zach kasis lama or. The Torah says that the pure oil, the clean oil, the first press oil, that is for the ma'or, that's for the illumination. And so from by virtue of a drasha, we now know that the second and third press is going to be acceptable for menachos. Shavin. We are on the top of Peivav Amud Beis. And we talk in our Mishnah about equivalency. And the Gemara right now is asking a question. Basically, equivalency, what are you talking about? How can there be an equivalency between 1A and 1B? Or I should say better, right, 2A and 1B. What kind of equivalency are there? It's not equivalent. 2A is used for menorah. And 1B is used only for mincha, not for menorah. So what are you talking about, equivalency? So the Gemara's answer, Rav Nachman Yitzchak, my shavin shavin lamenachos. Yeah, in other words, you're right. Vis-a-vis the menorah, they're not equivalent. But vis-a-vis mincha, they are. Meaning, like I said back in the Mishnah, but here the Gemara is spelling it out, you could use your 2A for a mincha. Meaning, it is also eligible for the menorah, but that doesn't mean it's exclusive to the menorah. It also means that if you want, you could take 2A and use it for your mincha. That would be fine. Af kol ha-menachos hayu bedin. Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Zach ein zach ela naki. Zach in the context of the Torah means it's got to be clean, like I described earlier. Meaning the olive oil can't be cloudy. Rabbi Yehuda omer kasis ein kasis ela katush. Now Rabbi Yehuda says that the word kasis means that it's got to be pounded. Right, right. Earlier this morning, we talked about how the pounding is a Rav Yehuda idea. Yechol yizach kasis pasul lemenachos. And again, now the Braisa expresses the same idea that we saw back in the Mishnah. I might have thought that if I have it pure and I have it pounded, so it's used for the menorah, maybe exclusive to the menorah, and I can't use it for a mincha. Tamalam Rav Yisaron solos balul b'shemen kasis. No, Torah says that you could use it also for the mincha as well. Imke matam lama lama or ela mimnei achisa kon. An idea which now we've expressed two times in this masechta, right? Approximately 10 days ago in the masechta. We talked about this idea that if that's true, so why then does the Torah not demand of us that we use pure olive oil for our menachos? And the answer is conservation, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Torah, was concerned about our expenditures. And if there is a requirement that every time we bring a mincha, there has to be only first press olive oil, it's going to cost us a lot of money, and the Torah was concerned about that. The Torah was concerned about Mamon HaShel Yisrael. And so, in other words, maybe you could have formulated an argument, not maybe, sorry, let me say it stronger. You could formulate an argument that the first press of olive oil should be the ones used for the mincha. In fact, not only could you, the Mishnah did use the argument, and the Braisa did use an argument, but Torah chasa Mamon HaShel Yisrael.
But the whole reason that most people brought menachos is because they couldn't afford something more expensive to begin with.
Okay,
fine. It's not a good dessert, it's a question of practicality.
Well, right, but no, okay.
That's true.
Right. Savas ben Yisrael v'ichui lecha shemen zaitzach. The mitzvah of taking pure olive oil. So Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, elecha v'lo li. It's for you. It's not for me. Lo la'orcha ani tzarech, I don't need the light. Meaning the lighting of the menorah is strictly for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not need the illumination. The Gemara is now going to give a number of different proofs to this idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not need the illumination. Meaning just a simple understanding. Meaning a basic understanding, of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not need illumination. In other words, that's a perception issue. We need the illumination. But in other words, we can actually see it. In other words, it manifests itself in a number of ways that there is clear representation of this idea that it's not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Number one, Shulchan Mitzvah from the Menorah B'daran. You walk into the Heichal. None of us are going to do that. A, we haven't had a Beis HaMikdash in just short of 2,000 years. And B, even when there is, you don't walk into the Heichal. Even Kohanim cannot walk into the Heichal without a purpose. Right? If they're going to be offering the Ketoros on the Mizbech HaZav, fine. If they're going to be lighting the Menorah, fine. But in other words, even Kohanim cannot just simply walk into the Heichal. But if you were to walk into the Heichal, so you're walking in now, you're walking in a western direction. And what you're going to be finding is then right in front of you, there's going to be the Menorah Zahav, the Mizbech HaZahav. To the right of you is going to be the Shulchan, and to the left of you is going to be the Menorah. So the Shulchan is in the north, and the Menorah is in the south.
As you're walking in, right, you're facing west.
Right. That's right. So Amar of Zrika, Amar of Elazar, lo la'achila anitzarech, v'lo la'ora anitzarech. I don't need it for eating, and I don't need it for the light. Meaning, the point over here actually is pretty straightforward. Meaning, think about our tables in our homes, and think about the lighting fixture. So where's the lighting fixture? Over the table. Okay? And depending on, how much you like to spend on lighting. So it could be nice lighting, could be not nice lighting, but the point is that the lighting is directly over the table. Or back in the good old days, they put the lamp right on the table. Why? Because we need to see what we're eating. In the Beis HaMikdash, however, it's not that way. Meaning, on one side of the room, table. On the other side of the room, menorah. So, just again, a demonstrable example of the light's not for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Number two. V'yas labayis chalanei shkufim atumim. The pasuk in Malachim is describing the windows of the Heichal. Now, the Heichal that was built by Shlomo, but again, the point is going to be the same point. Now let's talk about windows back in the good old days. Windows back in the good old days. First of all, the pane of glass. So that's, that wasn't there. But in other words, the window was just simply an opening, a slit in the wall, allowing light to come in. Now, generally speaking, when you're talking about the the frame of the window. So for us, it's a 90 degree angle. It's a flat frame. Okay, back in the good old days, it was not flat, but rather it actually was angled. Angled in which direction? Well, it depends which where you need the light. Meaning, if it was narrow on the outside and then widened as it come in, obviously what you need is you need light on the inside, so that slit allows the light to come in, and then the opening allows the light to expand into the room. Good. In the Beis HaMikdash, so how did the angle work? In the other direction. Meaning the narrow slit was on the inside, and it widened as it went outside. And again, another demonstrable example that the light is not for the Heichal. Kadosh Baruch Hu did not need the light inside. Chalani shkufim atumim. Tana shkufim mibifnim, v'atumim mibichutz. Lo la'ora anitzarech. Exactly like I just described. Good. Michutz ha'parochas ha'edus ba'ol ha'moed, edus hu l'chol bayi ha'olam, she'ashkin ha'shor b'Yisrael. Gemara quotes the pasuk from Parshas Namor. It's edus in the Ol HaMoed. I mean, there's testimony in the Ol HaMoed that the Shekhinah is there. Now, specifically, what edus are we talking about? Now, a number of examples can be cited in terms of what was clear that the Shekhinah was there, but our Gemara over here is going to turn to one detail in terms of where we see it so clearly. V'im tam la'ora anitzarech v'alo kol arbeim shana sha'achu Yisrael b'midbar la'achu ela la'oro. Now, we know that Kadosh Baruch Hu does not need the light because 40 years in the desert and Kadosh Baruch Hu was supplying the light. Aside from the fact, it's so interesting, meaning the sun rises every day, meaning Kadosh Baruch Hu is supplying the light on a daily basis. I guess the Midbar, is not a quote-unquote natural event, a natural occurrence, so even more demonstrable that Kadosh Baruch Hu is the producer of light. Anyway, but again, I know we're repeating the same point, but Kadosh Baruch Hu is not in need of any light. So, the menorah there is therefore not serving as any kind of illumination for the Heichal. It's not necessary, but rather what it's doing is it's providing testimony. Specifically, what about the menorah is providing testimony? My edusa, amarava zirna amaravi. It's talking about the western lamp. Shenosna bashemen keneged chavruseha. In other words, we're putting an oil opposite its partner. I'll explain that better in just a moment. We would light from it. And from there, we would conclude. Okay. The Nera Maravi. Okay. Much to talk about in terms of the Nera Maravi. For today, I'll just go through Rashi. Okay. I'll keep it as simple as possible. Right. I'm oversimplifying, but I'll keep it as simple as possible. Take a look at that last Rashi before the next Mishnah, where Rashi writes as follows: Mimenu hayamadlik, ha'acherus uva hayamisayim. So we would use this Nera Maravi to light the other ones, and with this one we would conclude. Now Rashi over here quotes a Mishnah in Tamid, right? Kidnan, bab masa shtei neros mizrachis delukim. In other words, what would happen when the Kohen would walk in the morning? He would find that of the menorah that was lit the night prior, meaning the mitzvah to light the menorah is in the evening, where enough oil was placed in so that it would be lit throughout the night. Now, the vast majority of the Rishonim are of the opinion that the menorah was lit overnight and not during the day. The Rambam takes an interesting viewpoint that the menorah was lit at night and it was lit once again in the morning for the day as well. Okay, but let's keep everything simple. And again, and the Rashi over here certainly is assuming that it was lit for the night and only for the night. In the morning when the Kohen would get there, so we would find two of the lamps still lit. Shemenorah Haisa Omedes Mizrachu Ma'arav. The way Rashi has the menorah right here is that it's working in an east-west orientation. Now, it happens to be that there's a debate in terms of whether it's an east-west or a north-south. But again, we'll just stick with Rashi over here. We'll get one picture for today. So it was an east-west orientation. And then, Omdos Mizrach, Umarav Mechaba Acha Shebetzad Mizrach, Umidashna. So, of the seven lamps of the menorah, so the ones that were to the most west, meaning the ones facing the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so they were still lit. What the Kohen now would do is that he would extinguish the one that was all the way west, and umedashna umeniach acha shebetzad osa shebemizrach, and sorry, the one most east. Sorry, the one most east. The two that were most east were still lit, and he would extinguish the one that was most east. Meaning now, second from the east is now going to be referred to as the Western lamp. It's called the Western lamp just simply because of its relative nature. It is west to the one that is most east. Hu ner ma'aravi, and that is the ner ma'aravi. Umenicha dolekes ad la'erev. And, miraculously, it remained lit, meaning it wasn't extra oil that was added to it, it was just simply the nace. And in the context of our Gemara, it's the edus, it's the testimony being provided. Umadaka acheros shekavu b'shachar. Umetivo v'zarek ma shenishar min Hashemunim min Basil alechutz. Now with it, meaning now with this Western lamp, as we are now approaching evening, so it is from it that we're lighting the other six lamps. Then what's going to happen is that they're going to extinguish it, and then they're going to relight it. V'nosem b'Hashemunim p'silo umadlika. So that the mitzvah of halakha can be performed. Meaning, apparently, the way Rashi is describing it, it would have remained lit. But in other words, but there's also a mitzvah of hadlaka. We have a mitzvah to light. So therefore, in the evening, so we use it to light the others. Then what we do is we extinguish it, clean it out, and re-oil it, re-wick it. And then we're going to light it again. U'misayim ba hadlaka shayam alika basar kol haneros. And that's what's meant with umisayim ba. And this will be the conclusion. Meaning because now the way we just described it, it's literally going to be the last lamp that's lit in the evening, being that it was the one that facilitated the lighting of the others. Okay, adkan. Okay, recap of today. We finished off the previous Mishnah talking about which oils are disqualified. We identified various secretions which may or may not be acceptable to be used as oil. And then the Mishnah went ahead and described the three harvests that are done over the course of the season, the three pressings that are done from the three harvests, and then a detailed description from the Mishnah and the Gemara, and then the second Mishnah that we did today was a grading system of how we are to grade them. For the menorah, you always use the first press of each one of the harvests, the 1A, 2A, 3A, and then vis-a-vis the menachos, you could use any one of the pressings, and it's just going to be a question now of if there's a choice of which one to get, which one should you get? And the Mishnah went through an entire grading system. And then finally we concluded with powerful ideas regarding the light of the menorah, which is really there just to serve as edus.